Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. WITF's election 2020 coverage on Smart Talk continues today, featuring our first conversation with a presidential candidate. Joe Jorgensen is running for president of the United States from the Libertarian Party. She is on Pennsylvania's 2020 ballot. Of course, Dr. Jorgensen's opponents are Republican incumbent Donald Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden. These conversations are designed to give voters an opportunity to hear where candidates stand on the issues. Dr. Joe Jorgensen, welcome to the program.
Oh, so glad to be here. Thanks so much.
So why are you running for president?
Because government is too big, too bossy, too nosy, too intrusive. But the worst part is they usually end up hurting the very people they help. And I believe that everybody here in the audience knows better how to run their lives, how to make their decisions, and how to spend their money than any bureaucrat in Washington.
You know, that has been the Libertarian Party's philosophy for, you know, since the beginning of the Libertarian Party. But now here comes the part that I'm sure you're asked every time you have a journalist who talks to you. Why do it? Candidates from parties other than the Democrats or the Republicans have not been very successful over the years. So why do it?
Well, because somebody has to, because now, especially in this time of the coronavirus, you know, I got to admit, I was losing a little bit of my hope that the American people had just become sheep who just do whatever they're told. But when I saw the people in Michigan who rallied around the state house saying, no, this is the land of the free, we're supposed to be able to leave our homes. When I see the hairdresser in Dallas say, no, this isn't right, I have a right to go do my job. And by the way, people have a right to have their hair cut. And the barber in New Jersey, I mean, all around the country, people are just saying, no, you know what? And in the past, we would talk about the deficit being too big or the debt being too big. And that's all very abstract. And people kind of get it, but they go, yeah, but it doesn't seem to be affecting my life. And now people are realizing, oh, my gosh, how did we get here?
But the laws, the examples you just cited, those restrictions were put in place to keep the coronavirus from spreading. And in the case of Michigan, you had, I mean, that looked like a volatile situation where you had armed demonstrators that appeared to be very angry at the state house in Michigan. So, it doesn't appear as if there was some big conspiracy to limit the freedoms of Americans. It was to keep the coronavirus from spreading.
Wait. First of all, I never used the word conspiracy. I'm saying outright demands. You know, what's ironic here is one of my grandfathers was an immigrant from Sweden. His family came here for freedoms, and here we all are under house arrest. We're told, at least in my city, that this isn't a conspiracy. This is certainly the mayor just saying you cannot leave your house unless you're going to work, going to help a family member, or you have some health need, or to the grocery store. I mean, it was a very short list, and we were told you cannot have more than three people together outside. That was outside. Meanwhile, the people in Sweden, they get to go shopping, they get to go to restaurants, they've got to, you know, so we are the land of the free, home of the brave, and it certainly isn't free. So absolutely, I'm not calling it a conspiracy. I'm calling it government as usual. People in Washington thinking that they know best how to run our lives and taking the freedoms away. And I just want to point out, this is the biggest difference between the Libertarian Party and the Democrats and Republicans. The way the Democrat and Republican way to do it is, okay, you vote for one person, and this person is going to kind of be a dictator, like we've seen these governors. This one person is going to pass a law that we all have to live under, one size fits all. The Libertarian is that you get to vote with your feet, vote with our dollars. And there's this underlying assumption that if government doesn't do it, then it's not going to get done. But Walmart proved that wrong. Walmart put out a law that said that you have to wear a mask in our store. We don't care what state. We don't care what city. We don't care what the law is. You're going to wear a mask in our store, and several other stores followed suit. So the libertarian way is you get to vote with your feet. If you believe in voting for a mask that day, you get to shop at Walmart. If you don't want to vote for a mask, you get to shop at another store that doesn't allow a mask. But the Democrat and Republican way is we're going to give you one way, one size fits all, and it doesn't matter.
Well, okay, along those lines, Joe Biden has said that if he's elected president, that he would want national mask wearing required. President Trump has not worn a mask himself very often. Sometimes he says yes, sometimes he says no, as far as whether they help. Where do you stand on that issue of people wearing masks?
Well, again, that you should vote with your feet or vote with your dollars. You know, people wonder, why are we so polarized? Why are we so divided? And I say it's because we all have to get together and vote on everything, and not everybody's happy. You know, like, let's take mask wearing, or let's take, like, education. Let's say you don't want prayer in your school, and your neighbor wants prayer. Well, what you have to do right now is you have to battle it out. You each have to support your own candidate. You've got to put out yard signs, contribute money, get all your friends to vote. And then on election day, one of you is going to win and one of you is going to lose. But the libertarian way is that you keep your resources. You get to send your kid to a school without prayer. Your neighbor gets to send his kid to a school with prayer, and you can get along. I mean, imagine if we started voting on, okay, are we all going to be vegetarian, or are we all going to eat steak? You know, that's really where it's come. And people say, well, that sounds ridiculous. Well, we've got laws such as vaccinations or religion or raising your children. I mean, these are very personal decisions. And, of course, we're polarized because we have to go battle it out at the ballot box. Why not let us peacefully lead our lives and get along with our neighbors because we each get to make our own choice?
Are you saying that people should not should have a decision on whether they get vaccinations as well?
Oh, of course. I think forced vaccinations is the most egregious law, because that's the government saying we are going to put something into your body. Now, let me quickly add, I do believe in vaccinations. I do believe they work. I vaccinated my daughter. My daughter has vaccinated her son, and I think everybody should get vaccinated. But for me to tell my neighbor, you have to put this in your body, whether you like it or not, that's egregious, and that's not America.
But isn't one of government's main responsibilities, if not the main responsibility, to keep its people safe? When science has shown those vaccinations work, and okay, getting back to the coronavirus as well, I think that if you ask most people, that the great majority of them would rather not wear a mask, but see that it keeps the virus from spreading. I mean, isn't there a responsibility for society overall, and government have a responsibility to keep people safe?
Well, there were about three questions there.
Oh, I understand
so
that, yeah.
Government should keep people safe, and I believe that the government should have police, courts, and military. But as I said, part of the reason I'm running for office is that government usually hurts the very people it tries to help. So, for instance, with the coronavirus, we still have restrictions in the FDA. We had in the beginning of the virus, there were dozens of kits that Americans could have used to test themselves. The FDA and the CDC blocked all but two of them in the beginning. Meanwhile, you look over at South Korea, they've got massive testing. They know, so they know who can go to work, who's safe to go to work, and who needs to stay home. And they were able to overcome coronavirus without even shutting down. Whereas in our country, we're not allowed tests. And then we all have to stay home and we lose tens of millions of jobs. How does that help us? I mean, you talk about keeping us safe. Here's, you know, how is it keeping us safe that we're forced to stay home, where we've got increased depression, increased substance abuse, increased suicide, and people not even be able to go to their loved one's funeral? How is that helping us? My degree's in psychology. Now, granted, my PhD is in industrial organizational psychology, but I do have have a master's in social work, so I have studied mental disorders, and I've got a graduate certificate in drug and addiction studies. And I can tell you that people are social animals, and psychologically, this has been very damaging. So first of all, the FDA and the CDC stopped us from getting tested, and right now, it costs about $1 billion to bring a drug to market. And thanks to the FDA, it's about a 10-year process. Only those companies with enough money and resources can even get their drugs approved. And what do? They weaponize their patents. They hold a monopoly. How is that helping people? How is that making people safe, keeping drugs from them? We've had time after time where there are other drugs being sold in the country. The FDA takes years to finally approve it. And meanwhile, it's the patients who are desperately waiting for drugs that can help them. How does that keep us safe?
Mm-hmm. And by not, when you say not allowing people to get tested, I think you are you referring to how the restrictions that were put on testing very early on, especially of you had to show symptoms or had to be maybe exposed to someone. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, exactly, and just the fact that they didn't have enough tests to test everybody because the FDA and CDC kept them out. Why couldn't we have used the same tests that the people in South Korea were allowed to use? And by the way, like I said, they got, you know, we've got cases skyrocketing in our country. South Korea is getting ahead of the curve because they're getting tested. Tell me how that's keeping us safe.
If you're just tuning in, our guest during this portion of the program is Dr. Jo Jorgensen. She's the Libertarian Party candidate for president. It's part of WITF's election 2020 coverage. Let's talk about some of the issues, Dr. Jorgensen, and you've kind of touched on this a little bit, but you blame the government's response for the coronavirus spread and rules and regulations in particular. As I said, I know you've touched on this a little bit, but explain a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't know what else there is to explain except, you know, I know there were several states and we haven't done a check lately, but my communications director just tried to call around and, hey, can I get a test? And in some states, you have to get a physician's approval. I mean, you know, we talk about healthcare being so expensive. How dangerous is it for us to go to, you know, even, you know, we've seen these drive-through tests, and how dangerous is it to put a Q-tip up your nose? Why do you need a medical doctor saying that that's okay? And then we've got, as recently as, 3 weeks ago, my communications director got on the phone, and there were still companies saying, oh, yes, we're not allowed to sell this kit in America. Now, we are selling it in these countries, but we can't sell it in your country. We should have everybody be able to get cheap testing. And the other problem, anybody who knows anything about economics knows that if you restrict the supply, the price goes up. Why not flood the market with testing kits so it's like going to McDonald's where it's cheap? How come only the few and the well-connected? You know, this is like Nancy Pelosi all over again, where she gets to get a haircut. Oh, but guess what? We have to stay home. And, you know, who cares if the commoners, who cares if the little guy wants to get his or her haircut? Just so the royalty in Washington get their haircut is fine. And this is not how America was formed. You know, America is supposed to be helping the little guy. But if you look at the Democrats and Republicans, all along, they've been on the side of, oh, the focus group. For instance, you know, let's talk about individual rights. The Libertarian Party, since its very first election in 1972, has said that gay marriage should be legal, that everybody needs to have the same rights in this country. And the free market also backed that up when, in the early 90s, Walt Disney Company started giving benefits to the partners of their gay employees, because they know if they want the best employees, they've got to offer good benefits. Meanwhile, we've got Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama in 2012 saying gay marriage should be illegal. How is that helping the individual and the little guy?
I want to move on, and again, the idea behind these conversations to allow voters to hear issues. I mean, we could spend a lot of time on any one issue, but I do want to move on to some others. As part of the coronavirus conversation, though, you have been critical of the stimulus packages that the government has come up with. How should it have been done?
Oh, the people should have kept their money and spent it how they want. Instead, we've got a CARES package, which, once again, the special interest, the money. Okay, so a lot of people are happy they got their $1,200. But first of all, even though those checks got delayed, you know, because Donald Trump had to put his name on it, that money was not coming from his back pocket. It was coming from us. It's our money just cycled to Washington. And it would be bad enough if it were just that program. But some of that money was going to corporations, the big airlines. You know, basically big corporations went out again instead of the little guy, because that's the way Democrats and Republicans work. The big corporations always come out ahead. I would have rather people kept their money and then they get to spend it where they wanted to. And by the way, I spent my money at the local mom and pop store, because guess what? My mayor shut them down, told them they couldn't operate. Meanwhile, the big box chains, you know, of course, the well-connected big corporations, the big box stores, they got to stay open, but the little guy couldn't. So personally, I want the choice to spend the money at mom and pop stores and not the big corporations.
As I said, I'm going to jump around on you with some of these issues. One of the things that you say as part of your campaign platform is that you want to make the United States one giant Switzerland. What does that mean?
It means we need to protect our borders, but we've got to stop meddling everywhere in the world. We're in about 160 different countries around the world, and it's making us less safe, not more safe. We spend more money on the military than the next seven countries combined do. We could cut $700 billion from our military budget and still tie for spending the most on military in the entire world. And we need to do that.
A lot of that money, though, I mean, obviously there are American bases, there are American military interests around the world, but a lot of it also goes to new technology and weapons. I mean, do you think that that is money well spent?
Well, personally, I'd rather have, private companies compete on technology. You know, one of the reasons that we all have such great smartphones is that Bill Gates and Steve Jobs hated each other, and they tried to outdo each other. They competed against each other to try to get us the best product. Anytime you have a monopolistic system, and, you know, this is what I don't understand, that Democrats especially rail against monopolies. Well, how about getting rid of the government monopoly? Rather than having a company who, We're getting defense contractors. These are the buddies of the well-connected in Washington, the big people in Washington. Why not let competition reign as it did to get us such great computers and phones and come up with the best thing instead of people in Washington giving money to their buddies?
You've been critical of Americans, United States getting involved in overseas wars. I think you have said for the past 70 years. Now, I notice that doesn't include World War II. But let me ask about one situation in particular. How should the United States have responded after 9/11? What we did, what the United States did, was go into Afghanistan that was harboring Al-Qaeda. What should the United States have done? Do you think that that was a just action?
Well, I would suggest that the whole reason we had 9/11 was the fact that we were over there, because bin Laden used us as a recruiting tool. Bin Laden was over there saying, and by the way, let me preface this with, there is no justification for flying planes into buildings. There's no justification for attacking a country who's just sitting there. And it was completely wrong. However, us being over there made it easier for bin Laden. He was over there saying, you know what, the Americans promised us they'd be here temporarily, and they're still here. They promised us that their military would leave by this date, and it didn't. They're over here trying to take over our religion, taking over our laws, and he used that as propaganda to get people to fly into buildings and kill thousands of people over here. Now, of course, you can't stop every madman, but I think that being, well, I'm not going to say I think, I know, being over there just made it easier for him to recruit people.
But there were reasons that the United States was over there, as you said.
Yeah, bad reasons. Yeah, bad reasons. We need to protect ourselves. There's no reason for us to be policemen of the world. Again, it's these politicians in Washington basically being bullies and wanting to take control. It's the people in Washington thinking that that the United States should rule the world instead of ruling its own country. And that only gets us into trouble. And by the way, that also hurts the little guy with taxes. You know, we keep hearing how great France is, and wouldn't it be great if we all had five-week vacations? Well, maybe we'd get five-week vacations if we weren't paying for their military, you know? And I say that facetiously, but look at $700 billion saved. That's a lot of money for taxpayers. Why should taxpayers in Alabama be paying for military bases in France?
Another issue, criminal justice reform. You would end the war on drugs and make drugs that are illegal now legal for the most part.
Yep.
Explain that.
Well, when's the last time you ever heard of a liquor store owner going up and down the hall of the high school trying to push gin? Or when's the last time you heard of a vodka addict trying to push vodka? Breaking into houses to support his vodka habit? Or when's the last time you heard of two liquor store owners having a shootout over the best corner? You know, these are all prohibition problems. These are all prohibition problems we had in the 1920s, and we have them now. So, yes, we do have a drug problem, but it's fueled by our laws. And, I was on a show recently where somebody said, well, I can see making marijuana legal, but not crystal meth. I don't want the house, you know, next door to me to be a meth house where they leave chemicals and the kids in the neighborhood are exposed, and then maybe, you know, you buy a meth house. But that's the reason to legalize it, because, you know, you don't, when's the last time you heard of somebody making bathtub gin, you know? I would rather have crystal meth being made by Philip Morris or Seagram's than the guy in the house next to me.
But okay, there is so much to talk about. I'm just saying.
I know. I would love to come back. We can just talk all day here.
Well, I am out of time for this portion of the program. I like to leave a message that the candidate can leave a message for voters. What would yours be?
Well, again, that government often hurts the very people it tries to help. That you know better how to spend your money. You know better what your family needs than any bureaucrat in Washington. And I would point out that 75% of our volunteers are from outside the party, because people realize that the old way isn't working. And people keep talking about two old rich white guys. That's the least of the problems. The problem is both of them want to spend your money. Both of them want to make every last decision for you. Neither one is doing anything about the crushing health care costs. And neither one wants to bring the troops home. So if you're interested in running your own life, in making your own decisions, and you think you know better, and you think you know best what's best for you, then to check me out at joe20.com. That's joe20.com.
Dr. Joe Jorgensen, Libertarian Party candidate for president. Dr. Jorgensen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Oh, thanks so much. You had great questions. I really enjoyed it.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
WITF's election coverage is supported by the law firm of Saul Ewing, Ernstein, and Lear.
Welcome back to Smart Talk. Most discussions of health care or health insurance don't put a big emphasis on oral health. However, the Wolf administration has released a 10-year plan to improve access to and provide better oral health care. Joining us to talk about it today are Helen Hawkey, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Coalition for Oral Health. Helen Healthy Hawkey. Ms. Hawkey, welcome to the program.
Thank Thank you, Scott. I can be Miss Healthy or Mrs. Healthy, whatever you'd like to call me. That's fine.
There's a lot of emphasis on children in this plan, so maybe Miss Healthy is the way to go. Also, April Hutchison, Director of Communications for the Pennsylvania Department of Health. April Hutchison, I'm not going to mess up your name. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott. Nice to be here.
If you have a question or comment, we are live. If you have a question or comment about oral health, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Helen Hawkey, why is a new oral health plan needed?
Well, Scott, we actually were really pleased. We just wrapped up. Our state had a 2017 to 2020 state oral health plan that wrapped up this summer, and we made some strides towards achieving some better oral health outcomes. We added some new programs to the state system. We worked on different prevention programs. And, of course, always looking towards increasing access to optimally fluoridated water for residents, as well as addressing some workforce issues. And so our new plan is really just going to be a continuation of some of those efforts, as well as adding in some sort of new and hot topics around ways to improve oral health. So, you know, you mentioned the focus on children, and, of course, that's a big deal. We want to see kids be healthier overall. We want to see them do better in school, which they can't do if they're struggling with oral health issues. And so we're looking at that, but we're also looking at ways that we can improve oral health for adults as well, which includes decreasing the incidence of oral cancer and increasing access to dental providers that accept their insurance.
When you say that this plan, which is called Oral Health Plan 2020, to 2030, a 10-year plan, is a continuation of another plan. How did that plan work? Did you see concrete results?
Yes, we actually did. I'm actually looking at the evaluation report right now, and many of the objectives that we set in the 2017 plan were actually met. So we were able to exceed our goals in increasing school sealant programs for kids, increasing access to oral health services through rural health clinics, and then, of course, increasing access to community water fluoridation, as I mentioned. And we've also seen a slight decrease in the number of what are called dental health professional shortage areas, which is a designation by the federal government, and it determines when there aren't enough dentists in a community to meet that population's needs. So we were able to see a decrease in that number as well, which is a very big win, I think.
When you say that there has been a decrease in shortages, that must mean there was an increase in dentist offices or at least access to dental care. And I would imagine that that's mostly in Pennsylvania's rural areas. How has that happened?
Well, there's a variety of programs. Our state runs a lot of, you know, we have loan forgiveness programs that can reward dentists for choosing to practice in rural areas. We also have situations where, you know, we can work with communities to basically try to get them to entice dentists to come to those areas. You know, we have some long-term plans that are in the new plan that I would love to mention, just looking at ways that we can look at residents in a rural area and get them sort of into the pipeline to become dental providers. So, you know, if we want someone to practice in a rural community, typically the best way to do that is to identify students in that community that want to enter the dental healthcare field. So we're starting to work with high schools and guidance counselors and try to really promote dentistry as a career option for some of these students that might be leaning towards health professions.
April Hutchison, why did the Wolf administration and the Department of Health in particular take on this project?
So, you know what, I think it's really important to remember that our mouth isn't separate from the rest of our body. And we've often looked at our oral health care for a really long time as a separate entity from the rest of our health. And what we've been able to find is that the healthier your mouth is, the healthier your body is. And we have set a strategic plan and mission and goals and vision for the department to create a healthier Pennsylvania for all. And so this is really a key part in all of that, is ensuring that people who need dental care can get it, making sure that we're also addressing the other issues. For instance, the healthier your mouth is, the healthier your heart is, you know, your heart care and cardiovascular care. And so we also have identified, and one of the key things that we have worked on throughout this administration is the social determinants of health and health equity and health disparities within our communities. And what we have found is that oral health actually plays a big role in all of that. And so where someone may have access to a physician, they may not have access to a dentist to address their oral health. And so this plan really helps us build on all of those pieces for the next 10 years to not only improve our oral health care, but improve our overall health care and really improve those social determinants of health.
April, is this plan aimed mostly at vulnerable populations?
So, you know, this plan does focus a lot on rural Pennsylvania. And as you know, we have a huge initiative within to help support rural hospitals, and rural health has been a major initiative of this administration. But it really does address looking at Pennsylvania as a whole. So in our urban areas, we still have we may have a high level of practitioners, but still may have an issue with access to care. And that could be transportation to get to a dentist. That could be that you fall in the gaps in terms of payment for dental care and can't afford it. And so we're looking at all of those pieces. And then statewide, we're also looking at fluoridation. As Helen had mentioned, that's one of the easiest and safest ways for us to prevent oral caries is through fluoridation of our public water system.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, Helen Hawkey. It's been 75 years now for fluoride in water, and you know, many people have attributed better oral health to that fluoride in water. So the question I have to ask is, 75 years later, are there still water systems out there that don't have fluoride? And what more can be done to get fluoride to those people that don't have access to it in their tap water?
So there's a couple different things that figure into this piece. So for Pennsylvania, when we look at the data, we're dealing with more than 2,000 public water systems in the state, because so many municipalities and different townships kind of manage their own systems. And so it really does take a lot of initiative to get all of those on board. And so right now in Pennsylvania, we're somewhere around the 60% range of those who get their water from community water systems receiving optimally fluoridated water. Now, the Healthy People goals for the nation actually are right around 78% to 80% as a goal for where we want to see people receiving fluoridated water. So we are definitely behind. And really the way that we can sort of get that groundswell to get people receiving that fluoridated water is, you know, for community members to really reach out to their public and private water systems and talk to them. We know that it's safe. We know that it benefits everyone. It really does make a difference. We see a 25% reduction in cavities, not just for kids, but also for adults and older Pennsylvanians when people have access to fluoridated water. So it really is an important thing for everybody to benefit from. And we also have to watch, you know, we've got about 1 million-plus residents that are on wells in our state. So, you know, there are certain populations, specifically in the rural communities, that may not be able to receive that optimally fluoridated water simply because they have a well system on their property. And in Pennsylvania, the naturally occurring fluoride level in groundwater is typically only about half of what's needed to be considered therapeutic for preventing cavities.
I didn't realize fluoride was naturally occurring. Percentages aside,
absolutely.
Didn't realize that.
Well, you know what, Scott, one more thing just to build on what Helen was saying is fluoridation of our water system is actually so very inexpensive compared to the cost over time of, you know, the issues that you may develop with your teeth because of multiple cavities, you know, endodontics, periodontics. So really it is not only a great public health thing to do, it's really inexpensive for our communities over the long term.
Percentages aside, Helen, I want to ask you this question. Percentages aside of public water systems, over the last 10 to 20 years, more and more people, millions of people, drink only bottled water, either because they think it's safer for them or that it tastes better. Have we not seen the benefits of fluoride because so many people are drinking bottled water?
That's a really great question. And it's honestly, it's interesting because many bottled water systems, you know, the groups that actually take the water, bottle it and sell it, you know, purchase that water from a water system that may or may not fluoridate. So, you know, we have some bottled waters that actually are optimally fluoridated. It just depends on who the producer of that bottled water is. But for the most part, yes, I would say bottled water has not done us a lot of good, you know, not only because of the, you know, environmental effects of all of that plastic, of course, but really we want to see people drinking out of the tap. And that becomes a big communication effort for us, is encouraging people to drink their tap water, you know, and understanding that that's really where they're going to get the most benefit. There actually are even bottled waters, and a lot of people don't realize this, that are actually acidic, that are, you know, have a higher acid level than tap water. So, you know, you can actually hurt your teeth by drinking bottled water if it's acidic. And I won't name any names, but there are certain brands that are more acidic than others.
We have a question from a listener who wanted to know, with so many toothpaste out there that have fluoride, why the need for fluoride in water?
That is actually a really great question. Again, so, you know,
we really thrive on great questions on this show. Helen, go ahead.
Well, and it's not a question that, you know, we haven't heard. We hear that quite a bit. You know, the benefits of fluoridated toothpaste are typically topical benefits, meaning that they're just from the outside of the teeth. And so what we see with that, you know, is if you're brushing with a fluoridated toothpaste and you're brushing twice a day for 2 minutes each time, then your teeth do get a lot of benefit from that fluoride toothpaste. What's great about optimally fluoridated water is that it provides that topical benefit of washing over the teeth, but it also provides what we would call a systemic benefit, meaning that you actually have that fluoride the fluoride ions, that mineral gets deposited in your saliva. And then as your mouth waters and you eat and you chew, you're constantly bathing your teeth with that fluoride ion, with that mineral, and it's making your teeth stronger. So even when we compare someone who's brushing with fluoridated toothpaste and getting fluoridated water, we still see that improvement in cavity reduction. So it's actually, you need sort of that 1-2 punch to make it work.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guests today are Helen Hawkey, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Coalition for Oral Health, and April Hutchinson, Director of Communications for the Pennsylvania Department of Health. We're talking about a newly released plan called Oral Health Plan 2020 to 2030. I have to say, April Hutchinson, that's simple but effective as far as the name for the plan. That's tells everyone exactly what it is. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. April, I'm curious, and I kind of wanted to follow up on this. At the Department of Health, You talked about the relationship between oral health and overall health, and I think that, you know, a lot of people are finally understanding that. But your research and what you hear from across the state, I said in my introduction that there usually is not a big emphasis on oral health when we're talking about overall health care. Are you hearing from Pennsylvanians that they need more support when it comes to oral health?
So we, you know, for decades we've been working on this within the oral health community. So one of the things that folks have said, what we're working on is the balance between the provider to be able to provide services to people who are getting assistance, and then for the people who are on assistance to be able to get to the dentist and have transportation and all of those pieces. We've been working very hard. We actually have a campaign in market right now that talks about water fluoridation and your oral health and the importance of making sure that you see your dentist. Even through this entire COVID, experience, we have provided guidance to make sure that people can get to the dentist safely. It is one of those healthcare plans that we don't want you to put off.
I'm curious. Like you would go. Can I interrupt for a second, April? I'm curious about that. Are there fewer people going to the dentist during the pandemic?
Well, there are fewer people going for health care, period, through the pandemic. And some of that is fear of, being exposed to people within a doctor's office. And so your dentist's office and your physician's office are taking precautions to make sure that you're safe. A lot of dentists have park in the parking lot, give us a call when you get there, and then you're the only person in the waiting room and you go through and back into the office. Dentistry, and I've been around dentistry for a long time, actually is one of the professions that always has had PPE. The personal protective equipment is part of what they do. You always see your hygienist and your dentist in a gown and masks and, in protective equipment. So they're always being protective of those sprays and, the airborne particles that are coming from people's mouths. I think in our society we've created the, it's like pulling teeth or I don't want to go to the dentist. I'm afraid to go to the dentist. And one of the key things here is that just like you're going to go for your annual checkup, you're going to go get your teeth taken care of. We make sure that our kids are up to date on our vaccinations. We make sure that our kids, go to the dentist twice a year to get their teeth cleaned and checked for cavities. And we also need to make sure that we do that for ourselves as adults as well. One of the things that we have seen a higher prevalence of in the last 10 to 15 years is oral cancer. And that's something that Helen had alluded to. We are seeing an increase of oral cancer in a younger population than we would normally see it. Some of that's related to the HPV virus, but dentists are now actively being trained and screening for oral cancer when you're sitting there in the chair. And so they are going through and making sure that you don't have any lesions or lumps, anything that shouldn't necessarily be there as part of your normal routine checkup. And so just like you would go for, for women, if you would go for your mammogram or you're going to go for your colonoscopy to check for colon cancer or breast cancer, you're going to want to make sure that you get that routine cancer screening for your mouth as well.
Let's take a phone call from Bill in Lancaster. Bill, you're on the air.
Good morning, Scott. Thanks for taking the call.
Yes.
Question regarding fluoride. I realize that we drink tap water at home, but we all, because there are obviously some elements in there we don't want to consume. When we're filtering our water, is that also filtering out the fluoride?
Good question. Helen?
Yes. So most water systems like your Britas or your Pures, those do not filter out any fluoride. The only water filtration system that will filter out fluoride
would be a reverse osmosis system, which is a more involved system, and it still doesn't filter all the fluoride out. It just filters some of the fluoride out. So you're good to go if you're just using like a refrigerator filter or a Brita filter.
Hey, Bill, thank you very much for your call. As part of this plan, I understand that there could be some free clinics and also some things that routinely happen with children in schools. What are we talking about when it comes to those things, Helen?
So we're actually, one of the work efforts that we're doing right now is we're looking at sort of the charitable dental work that happens across the state. And we discovered, you know, back a few years ago that we had about 10,000 different people in our state that were receiving free dental care through free dental clinics for, you know, basically a sum total of about $5 million worth of work. So, you know, we do know and we do track, you know, places like the pop-up dental clinics. Many people have heard of Mission of Mercy, which are two-day free clinics that take place a few times a year across the state. We also track free and charitable clinics that operate year-round. You know, so there are many options for people who maybe are income-restricted and they need to find someone to do services either for free or at a reduced cost. You know, and we're also looking at places like federally qualified health centers, which are amazing, you know, facilities where I think the latest numbers are about 1 in 13 Pennsylvanians get their care from a federally qualified health center. And we've got almost 100 sites of those across the state that have dental services. So, you know, we do track those things and we want to see an increase in those because if we're already giving away $6 million in free dental work, we know there's a need and we know that people are still looking for places to have their dental care. So that is a big part of our plans is trying to increase the number of places where people can seek dental care.
April Hutchison, where does PA211 come into the plan?
You know, I think that's a great question. So if you need resources in finding dental care in your community, you can reach us at www.pa211.org, and that will help connect you with resources for dental care, as well as so many other things as well. But that is a great resource, pa211.org, to connect to find a dental provider near you. It'll help you find clinics if you need them. We're really looking, you know, we've 180 different languages for that service. It's confidential. It's free. It's available all of the time. And so we really are looking for ways to help connect people to care wherever they need it.
Helen Hawkey, we have about 2 minutes left in the program, but we had a listener who asked a question, and she's looking ahead to the future, I think. She wanted to know if a day will ever come where we can grow teeth like we grow other organs in our body.
Yeah, and I will tell you, there already is research working on that. I won't say that they're pretty-looking teeth, but I know that there are researchers already growing teeth. But, you know, we do have new medicaments, and those are things to look at, too. I mean, we have a new medicament, new to the United States, we'll say, called silver diamine fluoride, which actually stops tooth decay from progressing. And so we're starting to see some really good, amazing things happen with the use of that product. And so, you know, it's definitely not outside the realm of possibility that we could grow some new teeth.
Okay, so when you say keeping tooth decay from progressing, that doesn't mean that you can get rid of the drill, though, right?
Not exactly, but there are instances where that decay can be halted and that the tooth may not need drilled. So, you know, it's not a cure-all for everything, but I would say I think the future is looking pretty promising for how we treat dental disease across the U.S.
Important
and
topic.
Scott, I was going to say one last thing. If you are making sure you're getting your checkups twice a year, dentists can actually identify that and watch those areas before it even gets to the point where you need a drill. Dental sealants on kids really help with preventing those cavities and keeping them contained. So, you know, they're making sure you get that checkup twice a year is really important to avoid the drill.
Avoid the drill. Now, there would be a plan for you. Okay, Helen Hockey, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Coalition for Oral Health, April Hutchinson, Director of Communications for the Pennsylvania Department of Health. Thank both of you for being with us today.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you so much.
We'll be talking about state police seeing a record number of firearm purchases. That's coming up on tomorrow's show.